Hello and welcome in to this Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you had a great day yesterday and that all is well with you, and that you and yours are doing well and everybody is safe. What an interesting day we live in. The same kind of clowns, the weasels, who did the Occupy Wall Street. Remember that? Where they all camped out and the filth spread disease and there were drugs rampant everywhere. And you remember that? Occupy Wall Street? These same geniuses, this same kind of brain function is now at work in Seattle, Washington. And we'll talk about that in a little while. And some things maybe we can do about it. I don't know if we want to do anything about it, but things that could be done. And more. Let's see. What else have we got here? The NYPD is reacting to the Marxist in the mayor's office. We'll take a look at that. Senator Tim Scott has set the record straight on something that he's working on and how he's being treated by Senate Democrats, which is very revealing because it's interesting that it's the Democrats who point at the Republicans and scream, "Racist! Racist!" And oddly enough, it's not the Republicans who are the racists. It's the Democrats. And there's more. We'll see how far along we get, what happens, and what we get to. There's also a recording that I've been wanting to play for you. It's been in the it's been on my list of things to bring to you, and I'm going to try to get that in today, about white privilege. And you know what I have said about white privilege here recently. I believe it is a uniquely progressive thing. It's something that progressives, liberals, leftists all suffer from, and they inflict it on everyone else. And we'll take a look at that a little bit later on today. Yesterday was a rather uneventful day, so I really don't have much personal news going on. The project with the washer and dryer, I don't want to get into much more detail about that. I just want to tell you that one of the things that happened, moving the washer and dryer onto the stand that I made for the washer and dryer, was that the front top edge of the stand that I made got a bit scuffed up. And I was not happy about that because I'd pretty much put a good full day's work into building that thing, and maybe two. But between that, between actually cutting, assembling, painting, and the like, yeah, maybe a couple of days because, you know, waiting for paint to dry and the like. But moving big, heavy metallic pieces of stuff onto a piece of wood, if you're manhandling things almost by yourself, you're going to beat things up a little bit. And that's what happened. And I was really not happy about it. All this work I did, and I knocked a piece of trim off of it, and some other trim came loose, and the stinking paint was all messed up, and there were scratches and gouges, and yeah, I pretty much butchered it up. And so what I decided to do was to get some sandpaper and to sand off the roughest of the rough, and then go downstairs and get the paint and come touch it up. And I stepped back after I sanded off the rough edges and ran my hands across it, and okay, that's okay. And I dusted it off to make sure it was clean before I went downstairs to get the paint. And as I looked at it, stepped away and looked at it, I realized, wow, now it just looks old. Okay, that'll do. So now it looks like I have an old stand underneath. Hey, where'd you get the old table? Oh, it's an amazing story. Let me tell you. Hey, here, grab a cup of coffee. But that's what you call making lemonade out of lemons. Thank you very much. And that's that. And what else? I mean, it was a mundane day yesterday. I had been our little car, the Miata, the little Zoomy that my buddy Mike likes to call it. I call it Little Smoky because it is burning quite a bit of oil. I changed the brakes on it. Changed the rear brake pads on that yesterday, and that was part of another thing. I really haven't talked about that. I had a rear caliper that was seized up, and it was grinding, and I bought a new caliper, and when I bought the caliper, I found a two calipers on Amazon, and I bought them. They came with brake pads and everything, and when it arrived, it didn't fit. There was no way, just absolutely no way, it would fit on the car. And I sent it back and sent that package back, and then went to the local O'Reilly's closest to the house and picked up a caliper and came back and got it all put on and said, okay, now let's put on those brake pads that I don't have. And I had to go back and get more. But that's all done. That's finished. And today it looks like I'm doing the same thing on my daily, what would I guess you'd call my daily driver, the Ford Flex, the the family truckster, as Dave would call it, and that's a project that might take half an hour to an hour if all goes well. And guys, you know how projects go. Oh, that's a snap. That's nothing. And then later that day, after you've made two or three trips to the parts store, you finally finish it, and you swear you'll never do that again. No, I'm paying somebody to do that next time. Never, ever going to do that again. That's my day-to-day. That's kind of how yesterday was. I forget how many times I scrubbed all the grime off of my hands just to be able to call somebody back or to drive the car and not get nastiness all over the steering wheel when I had to go buy parts and pieces and such. It was a crazy day yesterday. And hopefully it won't be that way today. And at some point, I don't know exactly how it happened or when it happened, but when I got up this morning, my back was talking to me. Not my lower back. That's a common thing with guys. Down in your lower back, all of a sudden, you know, you reach for a pen or a piece of paper and your back says, gotcha. Yeah, that's not what's happening. I got something else going on, pulled muscle or something, and I've been running a massager on it and things, trying to get myself, ooh, ow, I just tried to straighten up. I can't straighten up. So that should make for an interesting day today. Aside from that, what else? I don't know. There's just, let's see, do I want to go here? Where do I want to go first? I think what I want to do first is I want to play this piece of audio for you. It's a PragerU video, and it's about how to end white privilege. And who is it, Morgan Freeman, who said famously, the way to end all of this prejudice and racial issues is to stop talking about it. I'll just refer to you as a guy. You refer to me as a guy instead of a black guy or a white guy. Let's just be guys. And he was right about that. When we focus on what's different, we become obsessed with what's different. And if there are true issues, then we need to look at issues. But when we actually look at the data, the real data that's out there, we learn that those issues aren't really issues at all. In fact, they're it's the opposite of what we're being told. And that is where Brandon Tatum slips into the picture and his video for PragerU called How to End White Privilege.
Woke white people, I'd like to ask you a favor. Please stop asking for forgiveness for your white privilege. You're not fooling anybody. You're not helping black people or any other minority. And your public confessions don't make you look virtuous. They make you look disingenuous, which is a really nice way of saying fake, phony, and fraudulent. For starters, what is white privilege anyway? Because you're born with white skin, you have all these advantages that I don't have? Like what? Like you can get a mortgage loan that I can't get? I got a loan. At a great rate, by the way. And I got the house. Why would a banker not give a loan to someone who met the loan requirements? He doesn't want to make money? I've never heard of such a banker. Or how about this? You can enter a store and not be looked upon with suspicion, but I, a black person, cannot? Except that has never happened to me. But if I was a young dude with my pants hanging down to my butt, I could understand why the store owner would be concerned. I used to be a cop. Believe me, I understand. If I owned a store, I'd be tracking that kid too, whether he was black, white, or anything else. Or what if I had a store that had a history of being shoplifted by young black women, and a young black woman with a bad attitude walked in? Would I be suspicious? Yeah, I would. Who wouldn't? I call that common sense, not bigotry. But there's another way of looking at this. In many ways, in today's America, blacks have more privilege than whites. It's been my experience that whites bent over backwards to give blacks every possible advantage. If two people are equally qualified for a job, the black person will usually get it. Big companies and prestigious universities fall all over one another trying to sign up talented black people. If you deny this, you are denying reality, which is what the person who dreamed up this whole thing did. A professor of women's studies at Wellesley College by the name of Peggy McIntosh. She wrote in an article in 1988 about all the white privilege she thought she had. She listed 46, including this one. I can choose bandages and flesh color and have them more or less match my skin. Wow, that's some kind of privilege. Soon others took up the cause. Today, these so-called progressives dominate our colleges and universities, imposing this absurd notion of white privilege on their students. That's too bad because it does nothing good for white students, and it does nothing good for black students. But of the two, ironically, the white students get the better of the deal. Let me explain. To acknowledge your white privilege is supposed to make you feel bad, only it doesn't. It makes you feel good because by acknowledging your white privilege, you're declaring yourself to be enlightened. And as a virtue bonus, it also makes you a better person than those whites who don't acknowledge their privilege. White privilege, which is supposed to make you feel bad, ends up making you feel good. Meanwhile, the real damage is to blacks. What makes whites feel good makes blacks angry. More than 50 years after the civil rights movement, the message is, you're still oppressed. How can this not create a victim mentality? And anyone of any color who sees himself as a victim gets angry. Now, I wouldn't deny for a second that there are privileges in life. They're all over the place. There's two-parent family privilege. That's huge. There's being lucky to be born in America privilege. There's good gene privilege. But white privilege? Doesn't it depend on the person? Let's take this for example. A black lawyer and his wife have a baby, and a meth addict, single white woman, has a baby. Which kid has privilege? The white one? Because he's white? Come on now. And here's the kicker. Even if it were true, all those claims about white privilege, so what? Would it change a single thing I did? If white people apologize for being white, is that supposed to help me? In what way? So let's be real. White privilege is an attempt by the left to divide Americans by race. It's all theory and all nonsense. If you want to fall for it, go ahead. It's a free country. But don't try to sell it to me. I'm an American who deal with my fellow Americans one-on-one. Try it. It works. I'm Brandon Tatum for Prager University.
Excellent. A very, very good take on this entire silliness about white privilege. Now, remember what I told you recently, and I agree, completely agree, because another black guy posted a video online spelling out what white privilege actually is and encouraging us to actually acknowledge the fact that it does exist. Now, what Brandon Tatum just showed you is that what is being portrayed as white privilege doesn't exist. It's all made up. It's all theory, and it's all ridiculous. And you heard him talk about Band-Aids as part of it. I've heard of that for years now. I wasn't really sure where it actually came from, but now I know, and so do you. But actually, it used to be a joke on sitcoms. You know, the black patients are complaining about the flesh-colored Band-Aids. But it's ridiculous. It's you have to want to be offended in order to embrace something like that. It's a ridiculous thing. So it is all theory and it's all ludicrous. But in the real world, there is a certain kind of privilege that is exercised by progressives. And it's been going on ever since the emancipation, where they look down on everyone else, especially people who at some point were actually victims, but no longer, and they feel like it is their duty to step in and help them. Because without their help, they won't be able to survive in the real world. Well, black people proved that wrong from the very beginning. Don't forget, the first female millionaire was a black woman. Black people didn't need the help of the liberals. But the liberals insisted on doing it, looking down their noses at black people, believing that they were inferior. And without the help of the elite, they would never make it in life. That is the white privilege we should be confronting and reminding people, black people are just as capable as anyone else of success. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast for Thursday, the 11th day of June, 2020. Thanks for being here. You've probably seen the CNN poll. CNN is saying that in their most recent poll that Joe Biden has launched out a substantial lead ahead of President Donald Trump. I would encourage you to actually look at the facts around their polling. Because when your survey group is only 25% Republican, you can get results like that. Yeah, 25% Republican. This is something that CNN and the polling organizations that they use do on a regular basis. They undersample the Republicans. They oversample Democrats and Independents. And also, in this particular poll, they didn't talk to likely voters. They just talked to adults. Not even just voters. Not intentional voters. Not previous, just adults. So, in many ways, their survey was very flawed. And what it's intended to do is to suppress voting. Because, remember, don't ever forget this. Polls don't reflect reality. They don't reflect opinion. They shape opinion. And that's the purpose of polling when used in politics. It's to shape opinion, to convince people that certain things are true, which are not necessarily true. And to convince people, why bother? He's going to lose. Why vote for him? He's just going to lose. And that is what they're hoping for. But just like in 2016, there are a lot of people who aren't answering the questions. There are a lot of people, especially when it comes to exit polling. Watch this time. Exit polling will be an interesting thing to watch on election night. But there are people who have never voted before, who just are not part of the equation. There are people who are going to switch parties. There are people who are going to walk into the voting booth and they're going to vote for someone they never thought they would have voted for because of what they've seen happen this year in America. And what's part of what's happening in America that's shifting the vote and shifting opinion is Black Lives Matter. Now, Black Lives Matter, did you see what popped up yesterday? I put it in my social media, in the podcast social media. But Candace Owen shared a video that seems to indicate that Black Lives Matter, well, it's not just an indication, it's fact. Black Lives Matter uses something called Act Blue for processing donations. They all funnel through Act Blue. Well, Act Blue, you donate to Black Lives Matter, it goes into Act Blue. Act Blue is an organization that funds Democrat campaigns. And everything looks, it's beginning to look like Black Lives Matter, the organization, is just a front for inciting emotion and getting people to donate to their cause and then that money going to Democrat candidates for their campaign funds. That's what it looks like. if that's the case, then America has been deceived deeply. All of this racial unrest is purely to generate campaign funding for the Democrats. And if that's the case, then honest, decent, right-thinking Americans need to stand up and make sure that no Democrat candidate ever wins again. Because what they're doing is using people for their ends, which is what Democrats always do. One of the, going over to redstate.com, there's an article I've had sitting in my stack for a few days, and I want to bring it to you today. One of the more dangerous things to come out of the protest over George Floyd has not been the rioting and the looting. Rather, it's been the mainstreaming of the organization known as Black Lives Matter, which is actually two mother organizations that serve as an umbrella for many local organizations. While the violence will eventually stop, it has in most cities, the effects of normalizing groups like Black Lives Matter and Movement for Black Lives will be long-lasting and highly damaging. This is a relatively new phenomenon, as prior to the Floyd protests, most seemed to recognize BLM as the fringe group it is and should remain. Their views, which we'll get into in a minute, are not just left-wing, but are tinged with anti-Semitism and black nationalism. Yet lately, we've seen people like Mitt Romney marching with them. We've seen their slogan painted on the streets of our nation's capital. We've even seen sports commentators fired for refusing to support the cause. We've moved past differences of opinion into outright Orwellian destruction. That's why it's important now, more than ever, to point out that Black Lives Matter is still a terrible organization. Ryan Bomberger wrote a piece for Town Hall last week, which takes statements from the BLM and M4BL websites. But I'd encourage people to go directly to their websites to read all of this for yourselves. Their positions are not being misrepresented, I should say. For example, both groups consider themselves abolitionist. What do they want to abolish? Police, prisons, and essentially anything else that actually helps keep black people safer than they otherwise would be. This is where the latest push to defund the police has come from. Quote, we are abolitionists. We believe that prisons, police, and all other institutions that inflict violence on black people must be abolished and replaced by institutions that value and affirm the flourishing of black lives. They are also anti-capitalist. Here we are, another quote. We are anti-capitalist. We believe and understand that black people will never achieve liberation under the current global racialized capitalist system. No system has saved more lives across history than capitalism. That includes black lives. While poverty in the American sense is still rampant throughout the planet, in terms of people dying of starvation, lack of shelter, etc., the strides that have been made in the last 30 years are incredible. All of it was because of developing economies due to capitalism. They are also parts of the movement that are there are also parts of the movement that are anti-Semitic. BLM's official website supports the BDS movement, an anti-Semitic targeting of only Israel. We've also seen accusations of genocide against Palestinians, which is a ridiculously offensive and false contention to levy at the Jewish state. The connections to the anti-Semitic Nation of Islam within these organizations are also pervasive. But as Bomberger points out in his piece on the matter, it's not just that their political views are toxic, it's also that they offer no path forward. Forgiveness and reconciliation is not their message. Instead, it's one of dominance, reparations, and power. Lastly, I'll note that they make it a specific point to affirm abortion, which is completely contrary to the idea that black lives matter. You can't claim to care about black lives lost to police brutality when you encourage the killing of hundreds of thousands of black babies in the womb. What this all shows is that BLM and M4BL are basically just left-wing front groups. They're pushing radical ideology and couching it in racial grievance. They aren't trying to build solidarity around a simple message, though the attempts to sanitize their movement try to present it that way. I refuse to imagine, reimagine them as anything other than what they actually are, because they're telling us who they are. Protest for societal change. Speak out against police violence. Talk about positive, realistic ways we can help. But Black Lives Matter is still an awful organization. And I'm not going to be gaslit about it. And that's the article from Red State by Bonshi. And it's right on target. Absolutely on target. I encouraged you recently to go and gave you the link for a few days to go to the Black Lives Matter What We Believe page and look at what they believe. Because they really don't believe in solutions. As he wrote, they believe in dominance, in domination. And then they scream about President Trump using the word dominate when dealing with terrorists in American cities. It's really interesting. It's very revealing. And they are not what they hope you think they are. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. You know, I like to start the podcast with an absurd item. I think I'm going to start the second half with an absurd item today. Because it's really absurd. It really is. We'll get to that in just a second. Hopefully you're doing well. Just a quick reminder, I post show notes every day. You should get the show notes. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. They are there. Also, if you're not following on social media, you can look for the Daily Perspective Podcast on Facebook and Twitter, and a link to the show notes appears every day after the podcast finishes production in the morning. And the notes are there. The notes are basically the links to the articles I share with you, plus in some cases I will have a little list of points to touch back on after each one, my thoughts on the article, and you can see that as well. And the articles are important. Even you may be thinking, well, you already shared the article. Why should I go look at it? Because there are other links inside the articles that lead you to more information. And the more information you have, the better. Because when you have more information, when you have more data, you have more truth, more facts, then you're better prepared when lies come your way. So please, check out the show notes, okay? All righty then. Let's see. I have to switch back over here. Ah, there we go. You've no doubt heard about what's happening in Seattle. The folks with Antifa have set up an autonomous anarchist zone. They're calling CHAZ, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. CHAZ, as in Chaz Bono, you know. Anyway. Police and firefighters vacated their premises, bugged out with a Twitter blessing from Mayor Jenny Durkin. Durkin dithered over the descent of protests into violence for a week before doing much, and when she did much, her choice was to tweet in hasty retreat. Anarchists quickly set up CHAZ to be and do its own thing, as long as that thing conformed with diktats of the CHAZ hierarchy. They put up makeshift signs saying, "You are now leaving the USA." As you can see in the photo that's in this post, they appropriated stolen barricades from America, which they despise. So they hate America, but they stole things from America. There you go. To paraphrase a former president, CHAZ did not build that or anything else. The CHAZ Collective thanked the mayor for her gift of a 6-block area of America the mayor does not personally own, and which includes about 500 homes of actual Americans, by storming City Hall and demanding that she resign unless she disbands the police. Demonstrators remained peaceful without reports of violence or injuries, but they're pushing Mayor Jenny Durkin to step down if she refuses to defund the city's police department. The protesters continued to camp out in a self-declared Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, a region spanning 6 blocks, encompassing the precinct, which has effectively been abandoned by law enforcement after the Seattle Police Department closed the East Precinct on Monday. They actually shredded every sensitive document in the place and then bugged out. Well, An eagle-eyed tweeter spotted an urgent problem developing in the secessionist Chaz Collective. The homeless stole all their food. Here's the tweet. The homeless people, actually they misspelled homeless too. The homeless people we invited took away all the food at the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. We need more food to keep the area operational. Please, if possible, bring vegan meat substitutes, fruits, oats, soy products, etc. Anything to help us eat. Call the cops. Oh, sorry, can't. They want to disband the police. The police are over in America anyway, and American police have no obligation to help secessionist Chaz, right? Chaz has no farms or orchards. Chaz is paved over with streets and buildings. Chaz can't feed itself. Well, in addition to being dependent on America, which it despises, Chaz is a hypocritical anarchist collective. It wants to enforce its borders. More tweets. It's been reported to us that pigs just took the barricades at the autonomous zone. People need barricade materials as soon as possible to keep the zone safe. Requesting 60 or more 94-inch long boards that are 2.5 by 3.5 inches. Again, these are needed to build and protect the barricades around the zone. Oh, what a shame. Chaz has no indigenous lumber supply or electricity or water supply. But they are building a wall. Apparently, walls do work. I told you it's the most absurd item of the day. It's just ludicrous. There's no farming. There's no manufacturing. There's nobody willing to work. That all adds up to starvation. Without help from outside, they have no access to food or any other supplies they actually need. So stop all access to the zone. If they want to be their own independent zone, make them independent. If they want to be their own little nation, so to speak, then treat them that way. They have to come negotiate. Cut them off until we come to an agreement. Set up a cell service disruptor. Find a way to do that with Wi-Fi. Cut the cable going into that area. When they can't use their cell phones or access the internet, everything will start falling apart. If they can't Instagram their beautiful little thing, they'll start having meltdowns immediately. And you know, there's this guy who's armed, this rapper dude, who's decided to take charge. He's essentially a warlord calling the shots. And people aren't happy about that. Oddly enough, they have set up their own form of law enforcement. They have their own police. They won't call it that, but they have their own police. Everything they're doing is, everything is hypocritical. Every last bit of it is. And it's all been tried before, and it will all fail. I encourage you to go look at French history and see what happened with the takeover of Paris and how that ended. When those people couldn't provide for themselves. And they decided to fight against France for their independence, but none of them had any real experience. And the French, and they barricaded themselves in. And the French military, having real experience, dealt with them. This is just one more example of gross ignorance. And it's common on the left. They're brainwashing themselves to believe that certain things are true and that they can accomplish certain things, but they can't. Because they don't know how to. All they have is theories. All they have is grand ideas. But none of it comes from real life or the real world. It's all just how they think things should be. And because they don't have any real life experience, all they have is the platitudes of their leadership, then they're going to starve. It's going to get bad. We're already reading reports of them extorting businesses. They're going in, on one hand, they're going in and just taking what they want. And also, they're doing sort of a protection racket, a lot like the mob. Hey, really like your business here. You got some great stuff that we need. It sure would be unfortunate if something happened to your business. But you know what? We can protect your business. All you have to do is provide us with what we need, whether that be cash or merchandise or food or whatever, and we'll take care of you. Now, that's illegal. But then Chaz is its own little world, so they operate under their own, I can't say laws, can I? Because they don't want any laws. So it's mob rule is what it is. They have no grasp of reality. They don't understand how life really works. They don't understand why it's important to actually have laws and why there needs to be law enforcement. Because there will always be people who will take advantage of any situation at the expense of others, which is exactly what these people are doing. So yeah, let's go in, disrupt their cell service, disrupt the cable and all of the internet access, and cut them off from the rest of the world. Because if we do that, they'll start crumbling. They won't be able to deal. Add that to them not being able to get food, and woohoo, it's going to get bad for them. Very bad, very fast. And our president has said to the governor of Washington, you need to take care of this. If you don't, I will. Because what's happening there on American soil is Americans are being victimized by radical anarchists. These people who are seeking to disrupt life in America and our way of government and everything. These people have basically taken over a 6-city block area where people actually live and people do business, and they're just having their way with it. And as a result, the people who live there are being victimized. They are real victims. They're victims of leftist anarchists who want to destroy the way of life we have in America and substitute some fictional, imaginary way of life that's going to produce wonderfulness for everyone. And they ignore the fact that every time it's been tried, it has crumbled, people have suffered, and in some cases, millions have died. We will not allow this to happen on American soil. It won't happen here. To be sure, liberals, leftists, progressives, at all levels of society, are going to have a screaming conniption fit that the president has said he will step in and do something about it. They will call him a dictator. They will say he wants to use violence, that he wants to oppress people. None of which is true. The last thing you would want, any sane person would want to do, is to call out the military on your own people. But when your own people are victimizing others, something has to be done. And we're back for the final segment of this edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Just one more day left in the work week, and then we can have a weekend. I'm looking forward to it, to be honest with you. Well, life in New York City for the cops is not good. Marxist Mayor de Blasio, who has no grip on how things really work in the world, is making life really rough for the cops. And the New York City Police Department officers are retiring early after losing support from their higher-ups and from political leaders amid mass protests and riots over the death of George Floyd. This is according to current and former officers. An article by Tim Pierce at Daily Wire says NYPD officers have worked consistent 12-hour shifts to curb the violence that has ripped through the city and destroyed dozens of businesses. Rioters have looted stores and injured hundreds of law enforcement officers, according to the police. Now, rank-and-file officers are electing to take their pensions and exit the force rather than stay in and cooperate with NYPD and political leadership that appears to be more interested in appeasing mobs than backing their police officers, according to an NYPD sergeant. At our level, he says, it's hard to say, but in the past, you felt like chiefs, like Joseph Esposito, had your back. Even Ray Kelly. Without Rudy Giuliani or even with Michael Bloomberg, things have changed. The Sergeant's Benevolent Association and the thousands I've sent them to provide me with a lawyer and dental plan. Very important. No one else will back us at this point. Chiefs taking knees and humiliating themselves. On June 1st, NYPD Chief Terrence Monaghan knelt in front of protesters in an effort to stop the episodes of violence that had broken out at the Floyd protests. Never bow to terrorists. Never. Never bow to the ideology of terrorists. Never. Former NYPD homicide detective Rob O'Donnell said that three close friends on the force had already retired, taken their pensions instead of spending another 2 or 3 years with the NYPD. Bernard Carrick, a former New York City police commissioner, appeared on Fox News Sunday and said that a flood of retirements has hit the NYPD since the Floyd protests began. Quote, you have some in the hospital, but there were over 300 injuries. And the thing that scares me, I'm hearing close to 600 cops have either put in their papers or they're talking to the department about resigning or retiring. Like, this is insane. That's what he told Janine Pirro. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio has had a strained relationship with his police force throughout his tenure, but the relationship has gotten more unsteady in the wake of the violent riots. Bill de Blasio announced a new administrative push on Sunday to cut the budget of the NYPD and redirect the funds to other community investments. Quote, we're committed to seeing a shift of funding to youth services, to social services, that will happen literally in the course of the next 3 weeks. But I'm not going to go into detail because it is subject to negotiation and we want to figure out what makes sense. That's what he said without going into detail on the proposal. The mayor's also come under harsh criticism from police unions that represent the NYPD's captains and officers. Captains Endowment Association President Chris Monaghan sent a letter to members on Saturday, ripping de Blasio and warning that officers should be careful and expect minimal assistance from the city if they have to make a tough choice. Quote, they do not have your back and will use you as a political pawn. My assessment is, hands off the protester or looter, you'll be assaulted by them. Hands on the protester or looter, you'll be assaulted by your elected officials. Be careful. Bill de Blasio and other political hacks in New York want to redirect funds into social services, youth services. Well, are they going to pay armed security to go with youth services and social services into troubled areas because they'll need it? Are they going to reassign certain police officers to help these people? They're going to need it. Because when these people go into these communities without security, and those in those communities who are the ones causing all of the trouble sense that these people are weak in any way, shape, or form, they will strike. Because when you're dealing with anarchists, you're dealing with thugs, you're dealing with terrorists, all they consider is power and strength. Can they beat you? Can they take you down? Can they pound you into submission? Can they run you off? Because as far as they're concerned, without the police there, it's their turf. And if you come in and try to change what they're putting together, things are going to get ugly. Very ugly. Defund the police. Without saying so, that is what Bill de Blasio is actually doing. That phrase, by the way, is painted on a street near the White House. I don't know if you saw that. Hard to miss it if you've actually paid attention to the news. By the way, that's the only petition right now on the Black Lives Matter website. Every Democrat politician, including Joe Biden, has been asked to declare a position on the matter and what exactly it means in media appearances. It has been redefined, twisted, and danced around for days. Now the buzzword is reimagining. That's the process by which the loony leftist city councils and others plan to reduce, redistrict, or restrict, and in some cases eliminate police departments. Well, Democrat nominee Joe Biden appears to be imagining something very different. In an op-ed for USA Today, he presented a plan to increase federal funding to police departments throughout the nation by $300 million, amid a whole host of really bad ideas, such as criminalizing 911 calls based on assumed intent, and a return to the disastrous home lending policies that helped create the housing bubble, and hence a huge recession. He also specifically rejects the idea of defunding police departments, saying, "While I do not believe federal dollars should go to police departments violating people's rights or turning to violence as the first resort, I do not support defunding police. The better answer is to give police departments the resources they need to implement meaningful reforms, and to condition other federal dollars on completing those reforms." Now, imagine this means a return to the use of Department of Justice investigations and consent decrees. They were used often during the Obama administration with questionable results on police morale and productivity. Of course, Joe Biden is going to fall back on old failed policies. This, along with negative media and derogatory comments from politicians, is described in the Ferguson effect. Following the anti-police riots related to a high-profile shooting in Ferguson, Missouri, police nationwide reported feeling less safe and less inclined to make stops. It won't be surprising to see morale and feelings of safety further deteriorate among police officers. Already, mass resignations are being reported in Buffalo and New York City. Biden is also going to spend federal dollars to encourage police departments to do things they already do. From that same op-ed piece, he says, "That's why I'm proposing an additional $300 million to reinvigorate community policing in our country. Every single police department should have the money it needs to institute real reforms like adopting a national use of force standard, buying body cameras, and recruiting more diverse police officers." Those things are already being done. Thanks, Joe. There's been a 63% decline in candidates for police for officer positions. It's doubtful that number will improve anytime soon, making diversity requirements difficult. Public services like law enforcement also have some of the most aggressive affirmative action policies in the employment sector. A recent report shows that blacks currently make up to 13.3% of police officers in the country. That's similar to their representation in the population of the country. Cameras really don't change police behavior. That's according to a large scale study. And as of 2017, 95% of large departments report using them. Community policing programs are also in 81% of law enforcement agencies as of 2017. Not all agencies, such as State Patrol and other specialty agencies, are using them. And we could go on, but time is gone. Joe Biden is stepping away from defund the police, and other Democrats are, not because they think it's a bad idea. Trust me, they do think it's a good idea. Many of them have championed it. They're on record as championing it, even though they deny it now. They're backing away from the defund the police idea because they're getting feedback from the public and they realize it's not working for them. That's it for today. God bless you. Have a good Thursday. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. Yes, it's a podcast. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.